Welcome to the Mommy Beta Podcast. This is episode number 62, and this is the place where we talk to you about what's going on mommybeta.com and also what else is going on in the mommy blogosphere. Our show today is brought to you by gazelle.com, and we'll tell you more about them a little bit later in the show. But first, Natalie and I are going to talk about the rude things that people say to pregnant women, math anxiety, the joy of birth, and what baby gear to buy used and what not to buy used. So welcome to the show, Nat.
Thank you. Welcome to the show to you. This is the Natalie Show. Hopefully people don't get confused. Just know that whoever's talking is a Natalie. It may or may not even matter.
Yeah, I don't think it really does.
One of us is super pregnant and the other one just had a baby. So
very pregnant. Yeah. So that kind of leads us into the first story. I mean, you were recently pregnant, but you don't get as big as I get. Like, you know, you are kind of tongue.
I think
you don't. You really don't. Like when we were at your sprinkle, I was like, what am I like 3 months behind you pregnancy wise? And somebody asked me who was due first, me or you.
No.
Yes, they did. But seriously.
So that's one of the rude things that people say.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, I should have put that on my list. So I wrote a post this week about, you know, the rude things that people have said to me. Mostly trying to be funny or, you know, make conversation. But people really need to think before they speak. You know, pregnant women are kind of sensitive anyway. So the Trader Joe's employee who asked me if I was due in 2011, insinuating that I was so big that I should have been due a year ago, he really should have thought before he said that.
He gets two thumbs down for that comment. Not
seriously.
Funny.
And I mean, he probably was like a single guy, probably didn't know better. But there was this guy when we were in Tahoe who was in the pool with his wife and like four kids and asked me, how many are in there? You know, it's like, come on, buddy, you should know better than
Definitely should know better. Yeah. I was walking down the street in Manhattan one day when I was pregnant with Miles, and waddling is more like it. And a guy goes, it's twins from across the street, yells. And I'm like, shut your mouth. I know for a fact there's one. And that does not feel good.
No, it really doesn't feel good. So I kind of made a little vow to myself to only tell pregnant women that I see that they look beautiful or they look wonderful or, you know, something along those lines, because otherwise it's just an unnecessary comment. You know, I've had a few ladies actually in the past week who have said, you know, something along the lines of, oh, you know, you look fabulous, or, you know, it looks like, you know, you've got a few months to go or something like that. And that actually makes me feel really good. I'm like, oh, thank God you're not one of those people who says I'm going to like drop the baby on the ground right here.
Right.
So I've decided I'm going to be one of those women who only says something nice and very
I have uplifting. Kind of a standard line that I say to everyone. So if anyone ever sees me pregnant, you know that this is just my line. I always say, oh, you're all baby, meaning like you don't look fat anywhere else. Just because it feels so good when people say that.
Now I know that you're being insincere.
So now if I say it to Alex or Jennifer, they'll know that I'm full of crap. But it is a nice thing to hear when you're pregnant.
It's a really nice thing to hear. But now I know that people go around just saying that. So now I'm not going to believe it anymore.
Well, you are all baby. Uh-huh. You don't have a fat butt at all.
Sure. Thanks, Nat.
You know what? I had another thing to add to this list. This is for the daddies. Do not tell me about your own weight loss or fitness when I'm 9 months pregnant. I do not want to hear it. My husband dropped a lot of weight recently using Lose It and just going to the gym a lot. And, you know, he's become really body aware. And it's not really all that obnoxious unless you're 9 months pregnant. And he's like, wow, I weighed in at this today. I lost this much weight. And I'm like, shut your face. I'm 28 pounds up and I could sit on you.
Oh, man.
But yeah, to the daddies out there, keep it to yourself. I do not care about your fitness while I'm gaining weight.
That is not cool. It was funny. During my first pregnancy, Sean, during my first trimester, gained definitely more than I did during my first trimester. It was to the extent, because he's, you know, a relatively trim guy, to the extent where his sister came up to me and was like, is Sean okay? He's looking a little chubby. And once I told him that, like, I don't know what he did to make it go away, but it just went away. But yeah, it's kind of funny how these guys can be affected by our pregnancies, whether that means that they're going to try to be healthier or maybe gain a few pounds along with us.
Right. He has this app that he uses that tracks it. And he's like, look, my, you know, it has a line graph. And he goes, the line is going down. And then he goes, yours looks like this. And he flipped it upside down. And I was like, no. Screw you.
That is so not cool.
Sensitive, that husband of mine.
Oh, man. Well, speaking of numbers and graphing and those sorts of things, you brought to our attention an interesting article this week about math anxiety. Do you want to talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, there was a study that was published recently in this journal called Behavioral and Brain Functions that talked about math anxiety, which is just what it sounds like. It's just this sort of fear of working things out with numbers. And it talks about, you know, the kind of anxiety you feel when you get the check at a restaurant and you're like, oh gosh, I have to split this or I have to know the tip. And so people find that very anxietizing because, you know, a lot of times math takes more than just working things out in your head. But this study found that girls have more of it than boys, even though both genders have it. And it made me think a lot because of a couple of books I've read about this that said that in some cultures, we don't sort of frame ourselves as like good at math or good at words or good at science or good at language. In Japanese culture, they just think you're academic or you're not. And everyone is expected to be academic. But here, we really do, you know, consider ourselves left brain or right brain. And because of that, a lot of times that can be gendered. And I was actually last week, I'm working on a piece for CNBC about a group called Girls Who Code, which is a summer program for girls who want to learn how to write code. And this program is sponsored by Twitter and Google and eBay and PayPal because so many girls shy away from science because they think that, and math as well, because they think it's geeky and they think it's for men. But once they start using it and actually coding, they realize that coding is creativity. You can create things through science mm-hmm. and math. So there's a lot of movements out there to make this not quite so scary for girls, but it shows here that girls sort of something about our culture makes them scared if we don't do something about it.
Right. So, I mean, that maybe gives another reason. Maybe it's not just girls think, you know, math and science are geeky or not cool. Maybe they're, you know, they have so much anxiety about it that it's not something that they kind of push themselves into. So that's, I mean, I certainly have math anxiety. I've certainly been the person who's just like, tell me what I owe on the check.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting because I like the formulas and kind of how it all works. Like I like to do our budgets and I liked physics and I liked chemistry in school, but I can't do the actual calculations. Like I have spreadsheets where I've created the formulas and everything that do the math for me. Mm-hmm. It's the actual arithmetic that freezes me up. Like when I get the check and, you know, I make a division error or something like that. So it's that kind of stuff. I like the concepts behind it, but it's the actual, you know, how many times does this go into this kind of thing that just is not my forte.
Right. And when I see something like that in my real life that challenges me, and I just recently took the GMAT and I was very, very rusty at that. And so I pushed myself to relearn a lot of that. And my husband Clayton was reading a book. He's trying to learn to code as well. And he says, well, I'm not really a math person. And I said, well, maybe that's your meme. Maybe you think that, but it doesn't have to be true. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, the introduction to his coding book, I found this part so inspiring. He said, this author was a dad. And he said, you know, my 5-year-old sees things in life that don't make sense to him every single day. And right. He tries to figure things out. Whereas as adults, if something doesn't make sense to us, we're like, oh, well, I'm not going to try that. But a child will see something that doesn't make sense to them and work harder to figure it out. So, you know, can we learn from our children to just not be afraid of things that we don't feel natural about?
That's very interesting.
Yeah, and I think we can really let our children inspire us in that way.
Mm-hmm. I think that's it's a really neat point. Yeah, I was watching Dominic play on the floor this morning. He was trying to get all of his animals underneath this like upside down box, all his little like plastic animals. And you know, somebody's head would be sticking out or somebody's foot would be sticking out, and he'd kind of jiggle it and wiggle it until everybody was underneath and the box was flat. And it was interesting just to watch him do it and watch him kind of figure it out on his own. And, you know, I think that's kind of inspiring. He didn't get frustrated. He just, you know, was just playing, but also learning at the same time. So I think that is kind of an inspiring little way to look at things.
Right. And I go back to, I know I've said this many, many times on the Mommy Beta podcast, but really you raise good learners if you're willing to learn. So, you know, if we continue to challenge ourselves, no matter what it is, you know, you're taking a sewing class, you're, you know, always trying to learn something new, you take parenting classes, it really sets such a good example so that our kids won't think that any kind of learning is anxietizing, not just math or science.
That's great. I mean, that's one of the reasons I've kind of shied away from getting an e-reader, because I want him to see me reading. I want him to see me reading books and not think that I'm just, you know, playing on an iPad or a Nook or whatever it may be. Because I think that's important to him, for him to see, you know, the people around him reading, whether it's books or smart magazines or that sort of thing. So,
Yeah.
But if you do have an e-reader and maybe you want to upgrade to a new e-reader or a new iPad, something along those lines, we do want to take a minute to thank our sponsor, Gazelle, who can help you do that. Gazelle is a place where you can trade in your consumer electronics, your used consumer electronics, for cold hard cash. This is, you know, they love Apple products, you know, iPads, iPhones, MacBooks, all those kinds of things. And if you say you want to upgrade or something's not working well for you anymore, or you just want a new one, you can send it into gazelle.com. You just use their website to get an estimate on the value. You send it in, they make sure it's in the condition that it's in, and they send you money for it. So instead of something taking up room in your house that you don't particularly need or want anymore, make sure to go over to gazelle.com and, check them out, get them to send you some money for your electronics, and make sure to tell them that money that Mommy Beta sent you.
Yes, indeed.
So, Nat, you wrote a beautiful blog post just the other day about your little sweet girl's birth. So the part that I guess really kind of got me that I didn't know so much about was kind of right after the birth and how it was kind of scary there for a minute. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So it's become a bit of a tradition here on the Mommy Beta blog, that every time we have a baby, we write our birth story. So I've been working on this for a long time because this is the one thing that I write for my children, not so much for our audience, although people do seem to enjoy our birth stories, and I'm glad for that. But, you know, I really want to remember all of these little details. Like, I want to remember what, you know, Clayton said to his mom when he called her and said, get out here to watch Miles so that I could go to the hospital. And I want to remember that we had to wait for his lucky Adidas track pants to dry, before we left for a hospital. And, so, you know, it's more for them than for us. But it was, you know, it was one of those things where it wasn't a, you know, super scary birth, but there was a lot to it. I had gone into labor the day before, but it was just so piddly that, you know, I wasn't really going to dilate for another day. So we ended up going home, and I was at almost 5 centimeters and contracting about every 7 minutes, but not enough to really get things going. So we went home, and, you know, I had to do all the tricks. Like, I put on that breast pump trying to get myself to go into labor, and, you know, nothing's coming. Actually, I did have a little bit of milk before she even came. But, you know, I had a glass of wine. I was just walking around, had really spicy Indian food. And all night, you know, I had a few contractions that woke me up, but pretty much not anything that really got going. So the next day when we went in, I went in for a checkup, and she said, well, you know, the woman there is funny. She watches my husband Clayton on Fox. And so he had never been to any of the appointments at this office with me before. He went to all the ultrasounds, but they weren't at the office. So, you know, she looked at him, she goes, you're Clayton Morris. And he goes, yeah, I am. And she goes, oh, I watch you all the time. And she literally, like, she had been checking me, and she, you know, like, pulled her hand out and took her glove off and was shaking his hand, like, right over my stomach. It's like, I love you. And I was like, can we get back to me, please? And, you know, she was talking about his career, and he was blushing. And so I think because she liked him so much, she was like, well, if you want to have your baby today, that's fine. She was just willing to, like, do whatever we wanted. I was like, yes, I want to do this now. Can we talk about this now? She even wrote him an antibiotic prescription because he was feeling sick, so that he would be healthy for the baby. So, we went to the hospital. And I think I've talked about this before. When I left Miles on my mother-in-law's lap before I went to the hospital, I was really emotional about it. Just kind of the way you were when you left Sean, when you and Sean left for the hospital, when you had Dominic, just like, this is the end of a small era, you know?
Yeah. Life's never going to be the same.
Yeah. And I thought that maybe you would really relate to that because you wrote about how someone had said, or maybe you talked about this, how someone had said, Dominic will never know what it was like for just the three of you to be a family. When yeah, did you write that?
That makes me cry. Just, yeah. Yeah, I did.
You wrote it, right? You didn't.
Yeah.
Say, yeah.
Yeah, I included it, I think, in our little family pictures blog post. And I just, you know, that he'll never remember. He won't have memories of it just being us. And that, I don't know, you can hear it in my voice that tears me up a little bit. I am, you know, a week away from delivering a baby, so I'm a little bit of an emotional wreck. But yeah, I mean, that just he won't remember. I mean, I hope that he'll always kind of have the feeling of it and the, you know, that knowing how well loved he was and always, you know, always will be, of course, but that these, you know, first 2 years were very special. But yeah. It's hard that he's not going to remember.
Right. And that was the culmination of everything when I just saw him sitting on my mother-in-law's lap, you know, coming up from his nap and eating his apple slices and said, bye bye, mommy. And I was like, you'll always be my baby. I love you. So it was awful. I cried all the way to the hospital and, you know, and Clayton was like, knock it off. He's like, come on, it's going to be fine. But, you know, I had otherwise a pretty good time. Like, I wouldn't say good time, but, you know, they broke my water. I was dilating really well. But I was, you know, once those contractions started to come on, I was like, well, let's see about the epidural. But if you have the epidural, you need fluids in you. And so I needed that sort of shunt in my wrist if I was going to get fluids. But if I didn't get the epidural, I didn't need that. And so they said, well, let's put the shunt in your wrist. And then if you decide you want the epidural, we can just, you know, fill you with fluids for 10 minutes and then get it. And I was like, okay, so we got the thing in my wrist. And then the contraction started coming on and I thought I was going to die. It was, like I said, felt like someone was sawing me in half because I got almost there. I just didn't know it. So I got the fluids and then I got the epidural 15 minutes later. And I wrote about how I was so grateful. I just would have married that guy, you know, who gave me the epidural. I was like, I will give him anything in this world. And then the baby came I had another midwife walk in and she said, oh, you're ready right now. It was like 10 minutes after the epidural. And I had her out in 5 minutes. So in hindsight, you know, if I had known that I only really had to endure another 20 minutes, maybe I wouldn't have needed the epidural. But how can you know that? You know, no. I just knew that I was wanting to just, you know,
it was time.
Yeah, it was too hard. And so now in hindsight, I'm kind of like, oh, I wimped out. I could have just made it just a few more minutes, but that's useless thinking. So,
yeah. And I would imagine pushing without the epidural is a whole nother ball game.
I'm sure. But like I said, I only pushed twice, you know, I pushed once that's and she true. Goes, oh yeah, the baby's out is almost out. Let's do this. And then, you know, we got all ready. And then I wrote this part about the socks, how I was barefoot, but I didn't want to be barefoot. Because I had taken off my sandals.
Oh, you were barefoot. Okay. I would thought you had like a pair of socks on and you're just like, no, I want different socks.
No, I had come in sandals. So I was sitting there and I kept like thinking, oh, I'll get the socks in a minute. But I had gotten in the tub. So I took off, you know, other socks. And so then I wanted, or no, I think I didn't even put on socks because I got in the tub. And then I told the midwife, you know, hang on, I want my socks. And I said, Clayton, I bought a brand new pair of just, you know, athletic ankle socks at Target. And I was like, can you get me those socks? And he goes, no, you don't want the socks. And she goes, no, you really don't want these. They're going to get messed up. I'm like, yes, I want them. I need these socks. And they're like, no, you don't want the socks. And so finally I just screamed, give me that socks. And so then I was ready to push. And it's funny that you commented on that on the blog. And I commented back and said, I think really, you know, the pair of like fresh, clean socks is one of my most comforting things in life, like one of life's little pleasures to me. So I think mm-hmm. I was just trying to bring myself something that I knew was comforting. So
right.
I did not care if, you know, they're $6 for a pack of five or whatever. And if they got one of them got bloody and we threw them away, you know, small price to pay for.
Did they get messed up?
They just took them off and threw them away. I didn't ever really see them. So yeah, I'm assuming that they did because I couldn't see them because she took them. She's like, I'm going to throw these away. I'm like, fine by me. They've served their purpose.
I remember that was the worst part of the hospital tour for me when I was pregnant with Dominic is that they were showing you like how the bed works. And then they showed this like basically this like trash can within those like red hazardous waste garbage bags in it that like pulled out from the end of the birthing table.
Yeah.
And I remember going, oh my God, this is going to be so gross and messy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I can't wrap my head around the concept of a home birth.
Oh man. Oh, I hadn't thought about it like that.
Yeah. Unless you just, you know, take your whole house and cover it in sheet plastic, like an episode of Dexter. Anyhow, so the baby came, and I will remind you that I didn't know the gender of the baby. I was convinced that it was a boy. And when they pulled her out, they said, oh, this is a boy. And I was like, yeah, I knew it. And because it was the umbilical cord between her legs. And then she goes, wait a minute, what is this? And she turned her over and she goes, no, this is a girl. And it was just such a special moment. I was just laughing and crying and laughing and crying. And Clayton cut the cord. Did Sean cut the cord? Do they allow yep. that during C-sections?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, he didn't with Miles. I don't even remember them offering. But he was like, oh, I guess I can. And I didn't think about this in hindsight. I thought, oh, that's a nice thing to go cut the cord. But then he goes, when I went over there, I saw way more than I wanted to. And I was like, oh, I didn't think of that. I would have been preventing you from cutting the cord.
Yeah, Sean actually had the same experience, but instead of seeing my, you know, lady bits, he saw my insides yeah. by accident. Yeah.
Yikes.
I'm surprised he survived that because he is the most squeamish person around blood and surgery, anything, that he saw my insides and didn't fall to the floor immediately.
That is funny. So, you know, after they cut the cord and they gave her to me for a minute, or two. And then they're like, you know, this baby's not breathing so well because she wasn't in the birth canal and she had a lot of mucus. And they called it something like tacking. And so the nurse was like, I need help. And she paged other nurses. So there were only two at the time. And then, you know, when the blink of an eye, there were seven. And they're like, you know, let's get this baby breathing. And they were mentioning things about the NICU, which is the neonatal intensive care unit, which you never want to hear, you know. And they're like, we think she's going to be okay, but we're going to watch her. And so they kept her away from me a bit longer, even though we had had initial skin to skin. And then, you know, they gave her to Clayton, but then they took her away really quick. And she ended up breathing just fine. But then I was bleeding a lot because for some reason I couldn't deliver the placenta. And so while the midwife was trying to get it out, I just continued to bleed all over the table. So throughout the next day, and actually still at my 6-week appointment, I had my blood measured, and I still am measuring really low hemoglobin, so I haven't completely made that blood loss up just yet. So I'm still, you know, the prenatal vitamins help because you're getting the iron,
right?
And she says, you know, make an effort to eat some meat. And so but you know, I noticed that I get hungry easily and I'm colder more easily. But you know, she says it should stabilize soon, so I'm not all that worried about it, but we'll just keep checking. So that was a little bit nerve-wracking, but you know, it passed quickly and then we were okay. So and then, you know, the end of the post, I go on to talk about how much I love her and how I feel so lucky because, like I said, I had no preconceived notion of who she might be at all. I didn't know what gender she would be, and so it just hits you from left field completely, you know. And I maybe, even if I knew that she would be a girl, my love for her would still hit me out of left field. I'm sure that's the case.
Yeah, I think, you know, any new baby, you're, you know, it surprises you how much you feel for them.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just so cute. How can you not?
Yeah, and she's just so precious. And, you know, all of these things that you had said, oh, I'm sad that I won't be able to do these things, I'm slowly realizing that I will. Like, oh, I will get to braid her hair, and I will get girl talk for her. And I hadn't even considered that stuff. And I would love a boy just as much. And you know, but I'm slowly embracing this little by little. And I had zero dresses for her, nothing pink, nothing gender appropriate at all. And then when I went home and saw the baby clothes that I had washed that I thought were pretty androgynous, they weren't. They were like, it was like baseballs and footballs and everything. So the night I had her, I, you know, nursed her and then she went back to sleep. And I was on my iPhone buying things on Amazon to be delivered for when we got home in 2 days.
That's cute.
So, but she's got plenty of girl stuff now. It comes fast and furious.
Yeah, I can't believe how many baby clothes I have from Dominic. I washed everything and put everything away the other day. I made probably like 3 Trader Joe's bags full of baby 0 to 3 clothes for the local women's shelter. Like, that's on top of all, like the full closet this baby has already. I don't know how I have so many baby clothes. Like, what did I do with all those baby clothes last time?
Yeah. And there's a lot of them that you get as gifts and then you fold up and I'm like, because it's not your wardrobe, you forget that you have them.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot that you get as gifts that I think I maybe didn't even put on them.
Yeah, I think he probably wore everything at least once, but I know I have some hand-me-downs from my nephew, I think, that probably came after Dominic had grown out of them, so maybe that's why I had so many, but I couldn't believe it. But just folding those tiny little onesies got me very excited about bringing baby home, and you know, all those baby clothes are so cute. And before Dominic was born, I remember I bought a lot of baby clothes used. And I actually have done this, you know, kind of continued to do it because I think, you know, kids' clothes, they grow out of them so fast and they're, you know, they're expensive new. And you can buy a great, you know, bag full of Gap and Janie and Jack and all the nice brand clothes on your local mother's board or Craigslist for, you know, $10 when its retail value is probably 100 and something. So, mm-hmm. That kind of leads us into the next thing we wanted to talk about, which is this list from Baby Center about 10 items that you should be buying used, and baby clothes are one of them. They're a little low on the list. I would put them up on number one because my personal opinion is if you can wash it, you can buy it used.
That's a really good principle. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really – like one of the things on here is a glider. I don't know if I would buy a glider used. You can't really clean upholstery all that well. You know, I'm kind of the mindset if it's like a table or something I can wipe down, or if I can throw it in the washing machine. Like a swing is on here, which I think is great because you can throw those like swing covers into the wash.
Yep.
And swings can be really expensive, and I'm a true believer in the swing. So everybody's got to have one.
I think so too. Yeah. Me too.
Were there things that you bought used, Nat?
I bought the swing used. I bought the swing on Craigslist. I did buy our crib on Craigslist, both of them, and they were new. They were brand new, but we can talk about the crib in a second. And then I'm not thrilled with the idea of the changing table just because I don't know. And the bathtub was the one thing on here. The baby bath, because yeah. Those get kind of raunchy, and I have a hard time even cleaning ours. You know, like they're a little places where the feet go down that I have a really hard time getting the towel inside of. And I guess, you know, you can, but you can also get, I don't know. I was talking to my mother-in-law. I'm like, can I recycle that? Just take it to the recycling center?
It depends on what it's made out of.
It's, well, they're plastic, right?
As long as it's 100%, if it's all plastic, like mine has kind of like a foam back or something in it, like you probably can't recycle it with that. But look for the number of plastic, you know, like just like you would on, you know, a baby bottle or whatnot. Look for the number. Yeah. And if it's, and you can check your local municipality and see which number of plastics they take.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, you know, for the environment, I would rather recycle that rather than buy it or sell it. I guess, but the Bumbo seat is another thing. You can just wipe that right down.
Yeah. And they only use that Bumbo seat for a couple months anyway.
So I think we short got of maybe a time.
2 months out of the Bumbo seat.
Yeah.
I mean, it was good for those 2 months, but.
Right. And the glider, I think, you know, it's a nice centerpiece to the nursery. And I still use Miles' glider. He's going to be 2 on Thursday. I can't believe it. And
oh
I know. And, we read books in there. He sits next to me. Like I expect him to keep that piece of furniture for a really long time. And, you know, his has got a cover that you can take off, but not all of them do. So I don't know. It really depends. I looked for used gliders that had that criteria. I think it just depends on what kind you're looking for. But I think we had emailed each other, just the four of us, about buying a glider. And I think all of us had agreed that that's a pretty good splurge if you're going to splurge in your new nursery.
Yeah, I definitely splurged. That was pretty much the one thing that I really splurged on. Actually, my mother-in-law splurged on. She bought that for the nursery. And I use it, you know, 2-3 times a day still. You know, he's 2.5 years old. And I think it's so comfortable and it's just pretty and it looks nice and it's, you know, it's cute. I think it's you know, a piece of furniture that could actually be moved into the living room at some point if it wanted to because of the style that I bought.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, not all gliders can do that. I think you definitely have to pay a little bit more for that. But, you know, in the long run, it's worth it. You know, why buy a cheap one that you're not really going to use for very long when you can buy a little bit more expensive one and actually get years and years of good use out of it? So I'm more on the buy the glider new and kind of go for it.
Yeah.
The changing table for me is just a piece of furniture. I mean, it's just a dresser that I wouldn't buy a used changing mat. You know,
my hesitation is. Yeah.
Yeah. I would buy a new mat, but the changing table itself, I mean, both of ours have been used. We bought one for Dominic on Craigslist for like $15 and I painted it green and it was, you know, fine, but really, really cheap and junky. And our neighbor actually just bought us gave us their old changing table and I redecorated it. You can read about that on mommyveda.com. And it's a beautiful piece of furniture. And I, you know, it was probably several hundred dollars new. And now it's, you know, pretty and it fits our nursery and it was free except for the paint and the decoupage. So, but the number one thing on their list to buy used, which you did and which Jennifer did, is to buy a crib used. And this kind of, I was very hesitant about this. I kind of thought about it and then didn't end up doing it when Dominic was born because it was kind of on the cusp of when all that drop side crib stuff was going on. And I know actually on my mother's club, they have a news release posted from one of the regulatory agencies that basically says it's illegal to buy or sell a crib, one that is drop side and two that has not met all of these new safety testing standards. And most cribs that were manufactured, you know, more than a year ago, pretty much, do not meet those standards. And you have to have a special certificate saying that they have been tested in order to legally be able to sell these cribs. So I don't know did you feel like you were taking a risk by buying a used crib or?
Well, no, because I had chosen the one I wanted on Pottery Barn Kids. And then I just searched it on Craigslist and I found a woman who she had wanted the same crib and her in-laws gave her one and she bought one at the same time. And so she had two and Pottery Barn charges you like $100 to ship it back. And so she thought it'd be cheaper to sell it on Craigslist. So it was still packaged in the box.
And it was a current model.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the model I had chosen. So I felt pretty good about that.
Oh yeah, I think that's a definitely a safe way to go, because I think it's important that it's a current model because that way you know you've met all the you know testing criteria, and you know it's not drop side and
right.
You know I know Jennifer because this all came out after Jennifer bought her crib used.
I remember, yeah.
And Jennifer's crib was a drop side crib. And then she had to write to Pottery Barn and get them to send her the conversion kit. So it won't drop side. So I think, I don't know what she's planning to do on number two, if she's still going to think about, doing a used crib, but definitely be careful on the used crib, folks. If you want to buy a used crib, make sure you follow all the current guidelines. It's a great way to save money, but you also want to be safe because that's where your baby spends a lot of his or her time.
Yeah. True.
Very true. Very true. Okay. So, one last thing, we do a little victory. We try to do it every time somebody has a good one. And I actually have a good one to share today.
Okay.
So we've all talked a little bit about doing kind of like daily affirmations with the kids, like whether it's, you know, saying when you're getting ready for bed, you know, what you enjoy doing that day or sitting at the dinner table and doing the same thing. And Sean and I have been trying to do this with Dominic. We're not great about it. We don't do it every day, but we do it, probably end up doing it about once a week where we sit down when we're eating dinner and we'll say, you know, I'll ask Sean what the best part of his day was and I'll ask Dominic. And last night I turned to Dominic and I said, Dominic, what was the best part of your day? And I don't think he's ever really like understood or responded to it. And he said, outside. And I said, oh, outside here, outside at daycare. And he said, outside at Dominic's house. So it was really cute that he understood like what I was asking him.
That's so cute.
It was super cute. And then I asked Sean, I said, Sean, was the best, you know, that was the best part of your day? And he said it was when, you know, I clicked the remote button on the car when I came home and it honked and he heard Dominic go, Daddy's home.
Oh.
And then Dominic turned to me and he said, "Mommy, what was the best part of your day?" And I like totally melted that he really knew what was going on. Like he knew we were all sharing and he knew that it was mommy's turn and it was that, and he was interested. It was just, I couldn't, it was just like such a leap in like cognitive ability and comprehension and like just emotional stuff. I couldn't believe it. I was like, well, this is the best part of my day that you just did that. I just wanted to share that. That was definitely my little victory recently, that he's, you know, kind of becoming more aware of what's going on and that the things that we're trying to do are actually working. You know, you think that, you know, he's a toddler and he doesn't understand anything that's going on, but more and more he really does understand. And I think it's neat that we kind of tried to start early and that it's catching on. So it's definitely something that we're going to keep doing.
That's such a sweet tradition. How cute. Dominic's such a smarty pants.
He is. He's a pretty funny little kid. So, but this is probably, is this my last podcast before, this might be my last podcast. I can't remember if I'm up next week or not, but, I'm very excited to share news about the new baby with everybody. It'll probably be a while until you guys get a full birth story. As Nat knows, it takes a while.
It took me 10 weeks.
Pen one of those. But thank you everybody for joining us today. And we'll be talking to you on mommybeta.com and of course in our weekly podcast. And if you want to talk to us, you can send us an email at mb@mommybeta.com. You can write us on Facebook or Twitter. And you can also review us on iTunes. We would love that.
Please do.
Yes, please do. So thanks everybody and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye everyone.
Bye-bye.
I'm so proud of you.